Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. News comes back with our first new show in 2023. We'll begin today's show with my October interview with producer Jeff Levinson. My guest is Jeff Levinson. He's a Grammy-recognized producer, executive, educator, and journalist specializing in jazz and pop. He's just produced Swiss trumpeter Franco Ambrosetti's realized project of playing with a string orchestra. This Enja Records release is titled Nora, with guitarist John Schofield, bassist Scott Colley, pianist Uri Kane, drummer Peter Erskine, and violinist and concertmaster Sarah Caswell, and featuring a 22-piece string orchestra conducted by pianist and arranger Alan Broadbent. I want to thank you for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
You are so very welcome. A great honor to be with you.
Thank you. My first question is, who made the call to get some of the busiest players on earth, guitarist John Schofield, bassist Scott Colley, pianist Uri Kane, drummer Peter Erskine, and violinist Sarah Caswell, in for a session with Swiss trumpeter Franco Ambrosetti and a 22-piece orchestra to record Nora?
That's quite a mouthful, and I could share with you that the effort to put it all together was big. The story, I guess it has its beginnings in two prior records I had done with Franco. Franco is a very interesting man. He's an emeritus figure from Switzerland, probably the dean of trumpet players. And he has been on the scene since the early 60s. And he has always been attracted to, top name artists, top quality musicians. They all gravitate to him and he to them. And so the group that you just asked about, featuring Schofield, Erskine, Colley, Uri Kane, Caswell, and also an important person we need to add here is Alan Broadbent. They were all eager to work with Franco. The idea was that this is a fulfillment of a lifelong dream. He's always dreamed of doing a project with strings. I think it probably was born within him during his early years of listening to, Clifford Brown with strings and Bird with strings. And this is kind of a a grand, sweeping, majestic type enterprise, and he wanted to place himself in the middle of this. It's also quite in line with his temperament and his nature. He's an extremely dignified, almost aristocratic person. He's lovely. And sort of surrounding him with the right people and the right sound and the right context for his flugelhorn became a mission of mine. I mean, this was important to treat him and the music in the way that he imagined. Mm-hmm. So a long-winded answer to your question, forgive me. But fundamentally, these are players who he felt very, very comfortable with. And once we established the idea of a string orchestra, then everything fell in place from that.
Yeah. It wasn't hard for me to compare the work of pianist and arranger Alan Broadbent with that of arrangers Nelson Riddle and Billy May with vocalist Frank Sinatra. The strings on Nora, I liken to a dancer switching lead duties with Mr. Ambrosetti. The strings buoy his playing during the composition so closely associated with saxophonist John Coltrane, After the Rain. And the tune All Blues, written by Miles Davis, in my opinion, was made for strings, with that indelible opening vamp played by saxophonist Coltrane and Cannonball Adderley. And Ambrosetti just gliding in with that melody. You know, how did you become involved in his dream project?
Well, we have a very intimate relationship. I mean, I see my role with him as kind of a, I try to be a fulfiller. I try to be a midwife. I try to enable him to, you know, create what I think exists inside him. And very often, he's not completely in touch with that. We have to discover that. So, you know, the idea of surrounding him with strings and coming up with this repertoire was very much a reflection, not just of who he is, but his mood at age 80. He's very dedicated to, you know, giants who preceded him, you know, so, you know, an homage to Miles, an homage to Coltrane was not a stretch for him. But at the same time, he's very connected to a romantic version of beauty. I mean, there's a lot about this record that strikes me as a love letter. And there's a poignancy to it. And forgive the metaphor, but it really does, for me, sound like a Pacific Ocean sunset. You know, it's got an amber, burnt sienna quality to it that I love. So I think that a lot of what you are hearing or we are hearing here is his reflections on being part of a continuum, his notion that he exists within this long stretch of jazz musicians, and he's honoring his heroes. But at the same time, I think he's honoring his own place in the world. He's been at this for many, many years. And so I think he wanted to embrace a sense of remembrance and poignancy.
And with that, I want to add this quote from Mr. Ambrosetti from the press release. "When you have so much support from strings, I don't think it's wise to add too much. So you try to be essential, playing only the most important things that come into your mind. It's what in German is called Spiken, or saving notes, where you're trying to do only what you feel in that very moment." I believe he accomplished that. Do you agree, Jeff?
Well, I do agree. And by the way, I love that quote. And you know, the quote, when I first read it, it reminded me of the trajectory of musicians' careers. When musicians are young, very often you hear them throwing every note they possess at you. There is a desire to validate themselves as studied, informed musicians, and you're going to get the kitchen sink thrown at you. And then, if you're really good at this and you dedicate yourself, you spend the rest of your life stripping away the non-essentials. So this quote for me is it's kind of like the voice of wisdom. You do this for 80 years, you realize that you have something to say. What is essential? What is your truth? What do you need to say? Understanding that you no longer have a lot to prove here, but rather you have the need to express. So what I hear and what I know of Franco is that he was extremely mindful of his place within this surround sound environment that had been created for him by Alan Broadbent and the musicians, but that he had a 360 view of the picture. He had his vision of the picture and how to place himself within it. Fulfilling that became a challenge, and that is, one of the things that I have to pay attention to as the producer. But I thought it was extremely wise and sensitive and experienced of him to know this and approach the project in that manner.
Have the opportunity to interview audio engineers Jim Anderson and Ulrike Schwartz last December about their work on vocalist and pianist Patricia Barber's 2021 Grammy-nominated release, Click. As Jim put it, they work with what they have and bring it to life. Their ethic of improving digital systems and working with super high-resolution audio, DXD, is what makes their work, in my opinion, award-worthy and enjoyable to listen to. How was he involved with this, quote, new 3D technology used for Nora? Or maybe I should ask it as, was he brought in specifically to implement this new 3D technology?
Well, the one word answer to the question, how was he or to what degree, the word is completely. So both Jim and Ulrike are leaders in the field of immersive audio. And they have actually been fighting the good fight now for a number of years, incorporating this technology into some, oh, I guess, richer, more detailed audio landscape that technology can now provide. So they're very future-oriented. So the story here is rather simple. We were making a record. Jim is an expert engineer. We've done three records together. And just a very casual conversation as we were finishing up the recording, how this project was very well suited for immersive treatment. And not all projects are equally suited, But this seemed to have all the ingredients, big lush arrangements, strings that cover, a wide sonic spectrum. So he was the one who sort of led this discussion on how we could approach this in a new, enterprising way. And so I learned a lot from Jim. I mean, the fact of the matter is that I am connected to this world, but he's fully immersed in it. And we took his counsel very seriously. And I think the results were really, really good with his immersive counsel and leadership. He's good.
I loved my interview with those two. I wasn't totally up on all of the terminology, but they were very thorough in how they explained everything, and I really enjoyed my conversation with them. It was very enlightening.
Hey, Cheryl, if I might add, I too am not up on the techno jargon, and I have to stop for a moment and absorb what's being said here.
Right.
So I'm not totally different from you in that regard.
The Levinson Creative Group is the umbrella title for a number of your projects and activities. Would you please tell us about it?
Yeah, the Levinson Creative Group is really a loose consortium of people who do things with me. And I'm motivated by interesting, challenging projects. I'm really, I've been in this business since 1977. And so I do have certain freedoms at the moment to pick and choose the kinds of projects I feel like delving into. The Levinson Creative Group is a very loose group of people who all come together. We make records, we make videos, we do projects. And from project to project, depending on what the needs are, I'll know who to bring in to work with me. So honestly, what you're looking at is just a group of individuals who possess, I think, a passion, and I like to think endless curiosity, and we do things. And Franco's project is one of many projects that I have worked on. At the moment, it is perhaps the grandest. I mean, it's big. And that is essentially what the group does. I'm very involved in Europe also. I bring together jazz organizations and entities with American organizations in the service of partnering on behalf of jazz and jazz musicians.
Do you all share recipes and like bake cookies together and casseroles
We are so kumbaya. It's
and
unbelievable, Cheryl. Thank you for asking that.
All right. So, can we talk about two of your selected writings on your webpage? The one about guitarist Walter Becker and the group he co-founded, Steely Dan. They have always been one of my favorite groups, and I feel like I found my beat with and through Steely Dan. Before I became involved in music education and before I became involved in jazz radio programming. Now, if you write about them, you have a great and deep appreciation for them. Would you talk about that appreciation?
Before I answer your question, I just need to tell you that you are touching me deeply. And this is not a small point. And I'll try to make it very short in Cliff's Notes version. But I owe much of everything to Donald and Walter. I was a rock and roll kid. I had run a radio station in Westchester with Howard Stern in the 70s. And I was given a record that was not suited for the station's playlist because it was too jazz. The record was jazz. It could not be played on the station. The record was Asia. I knew very little about jazz. Again, a rock and roll kid. And my first record was the Everly Brothers. That'll give you an idea of how I entered into the music world. But through Asia, which totally captured my imagination, I heard a saxophonist. It turns out this is Wayne Shorter, and I'm really interested in that sound. And then I do some research and I find out that Wayne Shorter played with a guy named Miles Davis. And then I find out Wayne played with a guy named Zawinul, but then Zawinul played with a guy named Cannonball Adderley. And then Cannonball was inspired by the great saxophonists of another era. And before I knew it, Cheryl, I was doing time travel back and forth across the decades, learning about jazz. So, what started out as a simple exercise of listening to a discarded record, Asia, that was just being tossed, it was a giant portal that I climbed through. And within a very short time, I had people convinced that I knew something about jazz. And I thank Steely Dan for that entirely.
In my mind, I've always said if I could replace the soundtrack for Blade Runner with anything, it would be that album, Asia. Every time I watch it, I don't know why, but I think of Asia.
Great thought. I'm going to place it as one of the most perfect rock or whatever. I don't know what we're going to call it at the moment, but one of the most perfect albums. This is the execution of just a perfect vision. And in every respect, songwriting, sound, the vocal arrangements, everything is just perfect. Just talk about an earworm kind of a sonic environment. Those guys created something. I mean, just the percussion alone has stayed with me for decades. So I'm very attached to that as a creative achievement. And those guys in particular have always struck me as, subversive geniuses or genius subversives or whatever the case might be. And also, just one additional piece, just magnificent storytelling. The narratives in those stories in those songs, well, they're just, it's our version of high literature. So I have great, great respect clear across the board for all that they have done.
My interview with Jeff Levinson, with music by Franco Ambrosetti and the group Steely Dan. For more information, jefflevinson.com. And now for some music. From the archives, live at NYU 1980 by bassist Steve Tintwise, produced for the Inky Dot Media label last year. The concert was held at the NYU Loeb Student Center Eisner and Lubin Auditorium for their new music showcase series. This is Tintwise's composition, Risk O Disc. The spotlight band was Tintwise, reed players Charles Burkeen and Bayard Lancaster, drummer Lou Grassi, and vocalist Jeannie Sherman. Before this, two releases from Far Out Recordings featuring the keyboardist of the Brazilian jazz funk trio Azimuth, the late José Roberto Bertrami. These two releases predate the formation of Azimuth in the early 70s. On Os Tatius, the group led by producer, singer, composer, and instrumentalist Zé Roberto. From their self-titled 1965 release, we heard the Bertrami composition, A Bossa de Zé Roberto. And from Bertrami, known on this release as José Roberto, leading his own trio. This self-titled release came out in August. We heard Taluhama. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com. For more information about the show, jazzfluxus.com. We'll start off this set of music with a selection from an upcoming release by keyboardist Louis Siciliano. We'll hear the title tune from Ancient Cosmic.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
From his fifth release for Mack Avenue Records, the tune For Art's Sake. From 2021's Sounds from the Ancestors by saxophonist Kenny Garrett. And merging ancient Indian, Chinese, Persian, and African music with a jazz backbone, keyboardist Luis Siciliano's Musica Presente release, Ancient Cosmic Truth, and we heard the title tune. This release becomes available tomorrow, Friday, January 6th. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus, produced for and airing on WGXC, 90.7 FM, a listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WGXC, WGXC.org. For more information about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or jazzfluxus.com. Thank you.
preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.